Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. In the past 65 years, American Catholics have largely been seen as a reliable Democratic vote. In fact, Republican presidential candidates won slight majorities of the Catholic vote only four times from 1952 to 2012. But in 2016, Hillary Clinton lost the overall Catholic vote by 7 points, and she lost the white Catholic vote by 23 points. Thomas Groom says that significant shift is largely due to one thing. Catholics now view Democrats as unconditionally supporting abortion. He asks in a recent New York Times op-ed what, if anything, Democrats can do to win those Catholics back. Groom is professor of theology at Boston College's School of Theology and Ministry. He's director of the Church in the 21st Century Center and also author of What Makes Us Catholic. And he joins us now. Welcome back to the program, Professor Groom.
Thank you, Meghna. Happy to be here.
It's really great to have you. I actually want to begin our conversation in a place that you highlight in your New York Times op-ed at the third presidential debate between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. This was the one that happened at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. You say it's very illustrative of the problem that you raise. And I want to just play some tape here, because there was a moment where in that debate, the candidates, Clinton and Trump, were asked about abortion. And here is how Hillary Clinton answered.
I strongly support Roe v. Wade, which guarantees a constitutional right to a woman to make the most intimate, most difficult in many cases, decisions about her health care that one can imagine.
And here's how then-candidate Donald Trump answered, criticizing Clinton's position on abortion.
Based on where she's going and where she's been, you can take the baby and rip the baby out of the womb in the ninth month on the final day. And that's not acceptable.
Thomas Groom, you say that that's a very telling moment.
It was, Meghna. Well, because if we played on that tape, Secretary Clinton did not come back and rebut the caricature that Mr. Trump had portrayed. She should have come back and said, as of 2003, by federal law, partial birth abortion, which he had just described, is against the law in this country. 43 of our states have serious time limits to abortion, that after 20-21 weeks, they're not allowed. So that he had caricatured her position. And the tragedy was that she didn't come back and say, that's not where I stand. So my point, Meghna, in many ways, it's not to analyze why Hillary lost or how she could have won, but rather going forward to say that Democrats constantly underrepresent their position around abortion. And if I could for a moment, Ronald Reagan campaigned on a pro-life platform, got into office, and the abortion spiked. Bill Clinton campaigned on a pro-choice, got into office, and the abortions dropped precisely because he provided. Reagan had cut the social services. Clinton had restored many of them. So there's a direct correlation between abortion and poverty. Women below the poverty line are 300% more likely to have abortions than women above it. So if we provide decent social services, then we can greatly reduce the numbers of abortion. That's what's happened under President Reagan, from 2009 to 2014, the abortion rate is down something like 22%. Under Obama, is down something like 22%. So that when voters, I was watching that show with somebody who turned to me and said, "Well, there goes 5 million votes."
And she was a Catholic, fellow Catholic?
Yes. Okay. And a lot of those votes were in the swing states. It didn't matter much to Massachusetts or to Georgia. But it did matter in Pennsylvania and in Florida and in Wisconsin and in Michigan that the swing vote is the Catholic vote. And I think she lost a lot of them in underrepresenting her position.
Professor Groom, let me respectfully disagree with you a little bit.
Please.
On this. Because I feel as if maybe a challenge that some Democratic candidates, and particularly Hillary Clinton, faced is not so much that they weren't talking in a more nuanced way about abortion, or that they weren't acknowledging the moral profundities that come along with abortion, but perhaps that when they did, they weren't heard. And here's why I say this. Because, I mean, you say that Hillary Clinton didn't respond when Donald Trump caricatured her view of late-term abortion, but we went back and actually looked at the tape, and literally After Trump made that caricature of late-term abortion, Hillary Clinton did speak immediately after that. Now, she didn't say anything about late-term abortion, but she did say this.
Using that kind of scare rhetoric is just terribly unfortunate. You should meet with some of the women that I've met with, women I've known over the course of my life. This is one of the worst possible choices that any woman and her family has to make. And I do not believe the government should be making it.
So let me ask you, Professor, I mean, is that not enough of a nuanced or emotional or moral approach?
Well, I wish she would have said, we will continue to make it legal, we will continue to make it safe, but we will also work to make it very rare. And we can reduce it. I didn't expect her to come back in favor of limiting abortion. That's not her position. But she could have come back in favor of reducing it. So to me, Meghna, again, to respectfully disagree, that was not a sufficient rebuttal of what, because Trump had very graphically described this. It was like shocking to listen to. And for her to not have come back and say, well, she came back and said, well, in favor of a woman's right to choose and so on. But to, anyway, it's got bygones. So in a sense,
this is really important.
The looking back is not, I don't think, as fruitful as looking forward.
Indeed, but we can only looking forward. Point taken. But I do want to sort of dwell a little looking back because I guess my question to you has to do with when Democrats have spoken about abortion with greater nuance or spoken about abortion and acknowledge. I mean, you point to President Obama as having during his campaigns,
yes,
having spoken with more moral gravitas.
As a moral issue, not just purely legal.
And that reached the concerns of Catholic voters.
It does, because, you see, it is, in fact, a moral issue. It's a legal issue. But I think to speak about it with a deep empathy for women who have tragically to make the choice and so on, which I want to do always, and lots of my emails in response to that essay, you know, have reminded me of how little I know about pregnancy, especially as a man. So I don't want in any way to dismiss the complexity of it, the pain of it, the bewilderment of it all. But I think to get the Dutch of about one half of our abortion rate, and it's all because they have better social services than we have. They also have better health, better availability of birth control means, and so on. So there are ways that we can reduce this. But it seems to me that Democrats are so intent on simply coming out and say, "I support Roe v. Wade." Now, whether people know it or not, but the stereotype of that is that I'm in favor of unconditional abortion anytime, any place, and this is what Trump put on Hillary, upon Secretary Clinton,
right,
and she didn't disown it sufficiently enough to in my view.
I mean, to be fair to Secretary Clinton, the question Chris Wallace had asked in that at that moment in the debate was, would you overturn Roe v. Wade in the Supreme Court? I mean, it was a question specifically about the case.
Yeah.
But so you point to President Obama and a quotation he had about abortion in one of his presidential campaigns, where he said, "Those who diminish the moral elements of the decision aren't expressing the full reality of it."
Mm-hmm.
As a demonstration of the kind of language, the kind of engagement that you'd like to see more.
And the recognition that it is more than just a right. It's a complex moral issue that is very painfully made.
Yeah. Well, and I point back to that specifically because, again, maybe this has more to do with Hillary Clinton than Democrats as a whole, because in 2008, the year she ran against Barack Obama in the Democratic primaries, she spoke at Messiah College. And in fact, you know, you said that in the Trump debate, she didn't talk about keeping abortion legal, safe and rare. But that was literally the language she used in 2008. Again,
yes,
Here's Hillary Clinton at Messiah College in the Democratic primary.
I think abortion should remain legal, but it needs to be safe and rare. And I have spent many years now as a private citizen, as First Lady, and now as Senator, trying to make it rare, trying to create the conditions where women had other choices. I have supported adoption, foster care, and I think we have to do even more.
That's Hillary Clinton in 2008. Professor Groom, why is it that when Democrats say things like this, or again, or maybe it's just Hillary Clinton, that the caricature that you pointed to earlier is still
still,
it's still the one that seems to overpower the authentic things that the candidates are saying.
And Meghna, to hear her say what she just said at that college just breaks my heart. What didn't she say at that night? I think it could have made, it was a turning point. Now, I could be wrong. But my impression, and I've talked to lots of friends about this, but my impression, purely anecdotal, is that that turning point in the debate was at that third debate when she didn't come back and say what she said in other contexts. Mm-hmm. And the tragedy is that that indeed, what we've just heard her say, is her position. And I believe that. But I run into Democrats all the time who are afraid to talk about it. Now, having looked at my own emails this past week, I understand why they are. It's such a tense topic that is the last thing we can talk about, in a sense. And yet, there's so much division. Like, 80% of our country does not want to criminalize abortion again. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, 60% is opposed to abortions after the 21st week. So, if we could ever find a middle ground, and if we ever could provide the kind of social services, the kind of sex education, and so on, that we could cut this rate significantly. The Dutch have done it. The Germans have done it. The Swedes have done it. We can do it as well. But that's not how the Democrats come out and talk about it. They talk about it just simply as, we support Roe v. Wade. And that is so misheard still in our context. It's such a loaded symbol.
Yeah, I guess what I'm saying is, I disagree with you. I don't think the Democrats just come out and talk about it in terms of Roe v. Wade. And when they do, it's because they've been forced to, because we've been come through, you know, basically since the 80s, a political generation where, you know, it's not uncommon to hear candidates being asked about a litmus test for Supreme Court nominees about Roe v. Wade. You know, so is it so much? I fear we're going in circles here, but maybe that's because of my own lack of understanding in terms of what you're actually saying. Is it how the nation really talks about abortion, or is it how Democrats talk about abortion?
See, I wish we would take Roe v. Wade out of the conversation and, in a sense, start a new conversation.
Yeah.
Because, in effect, 43 of our states already have limits in place. I mean, Roe v. Wade, if it stood alone without any conditions, is the most liberal abortion law in the world. Now, in fact, 43 of our states have put limits in place, significant limits. Our federal government has put a limit in place against partial birth abortion. So, in a sense, we've moved beyond what most people associate. In practice, we've moved beyond Roe v. Wade. And I suppose I'd love to see Democratic politicians talk about it that way and imagine ways to continue to reduce the number, to make funds available. I mean, Colorado has a fascinating experiment in place for the last 5 or 6 years where they've provided effective birth control measures, and the abortion rate and the unwanted pregnancy rate is down drastically.
Mm-hmm.
So there are ways to do this, but I suppose I so seldom hear the Democratic Party talking about it that way. And even when you look at their platform for the presidential, I mean, they took on the Hyde Amendment to oppose it, which I thought was just the wrong signal to be giving. There was no nuance whatsoever in the Democratic platform in the last presidential election. There was in the previous one around adoption, around abortion, that they would favor adoption and so on, the kind of things that Hillary just said. That was absent from the last from the platform of the party running in the last presidential election. So it was almost as if we were just, I don't know, moving beyond the nuance or something.
Yeah. You know, so I don't want this conversation, anyone listening to this conversation, to come away thinking that we're talking about Catholics as a monolith, right? Because there's no single group of American voters that can be universally defined by one issue. But you are still saying that this conversation about abortion is important to American Catholics.
It is important. I think it's important to all American people. And I think any thinking person has to be somewhat reflective about it. I think my own tradition has been very strongly pro-life and opposed to abortion. Now, Catholicism is as diverse as Protestantism or as Judaism. You know, we have all kinds of the left, right and center Catholics, as we have various different Protestant denominations.
But voted for Hillary Clinton anyway.
Yes, I did, because my bishops, and not that I had permission from my bishops, but the Catholic bishops make clear that we don't have to be single-issue voters, that we can look at the whole program or policies of a politician and make a prudential judgment, as they call it. And indeed, while we're not supposed to vote for them because they're in favor of abortion, we can vote for them in spite of the fact that they're in favor of abortion for other good reasons, on immigration, the environment, and all the other reasons why I voted for her and happily voted for her. But I just wish that to my friends in Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania and Florida and the Cal, it's a swing vote. In she lost Michigan by what, 0.03%.
Right.
I mean, a handful of Catholic votes would have won her that state. And I think the Catholic vote, you know, the blue states vote blue, the red states vote red. The swing vote in the swing state, in many of the swing states, is the Catholic vote. So that if she wanted to appeal to that, then she had to do more than she did in that third debate.
It makes me wonder, though, I mean, isn't it also possible that many American Catholics are just have just become more conservative over time and that they were never, I mean, well, and here's why I ask, because, I mean, you point out in your own New York Times op-ed that part of the shift may be because many American Catholic bishops did emphasize social did emphasize in cultural issues, the culture wars, as you put it, abortion, gay marriage, for so long, that was a major part of the Catholic conversation in this country.
That's true. That is true. I mean, and good Catholics who followed their bishops and lots of parishes and what have you. I think there were parishes who very, not so subtly, encouraged Catholics to vote for Mr. Trump because of the abortion issue. And I encounter them in my own Sunday Mass attendance and participation, situations where the priest would never say that in his sermon, but he would remind us, you know, of the teachings of our church about the sacredness of life beginning with conception and so on, and you got the message. And there were bishops who did that in this past election. But generally speaking, I think anybody would agree that our American Catholic bishops over the last 25, 30 years, the ones appointed by Pope John Paul II and Pope Benedict, tended to be more conservative, not just theologically, but politically. And I do think they led us in a turn to the right socially, as well as otherwise. And I think some of that rubbed off on Catholic voters. And in a sense, I think if long life to him, but if Pope Francis gets a good run, and if somebody like him is elected after him, I think we will see a shift in Catholic voting patterns. Not that people will abandon these issues, because as I said, it is kind of deep for us. It's almost like I say in the essay, it's like saying to a group of Quakers, I'm in favor of war, without even stating conditions or preconditions. So that it is a deep issue for us, even those of us who have perhaps moved to a more mediated or a more moderate position on it, it's still a lingering ethical, moral issue, and a spiritual issue.
Well, I want to play another piece of tape for you because a little earlier today we spoke with Lou Murray. He's a Massachusetts resident. He's actually been on our show several times, and he served on President Trump's National Catholic Advisory Committee during the election. He read your New York Times op-ed, Professor Groom, and so we asked Lou Murray for his reaction to your piece. Obviously, he voted for Donald Trump because he advised the Trump campaign, and here's what Lou Murray said.
Most Catholics would agree with the Archbishop of Colorado, who came out and said that the overriding moral issue for Catholics when deciding who to vote for is abortion. Those who diminish the moral elements of the decision aren't expressing it in the full reality, was President Obama's quote. And I just think you can't nuance this issue.
Professor Groom, it's that last part of what Lou said about, in his view, you can't nuance the issue.
And he's saying he's more Catholic than the Catholic bishops of the country. He's more Catholic than the bishops, because our bishops say you can nuance it. In their document on informed citizenship, they state very clearly that while you cannot vote for somebody because they're in favor of abortion, you can vote for them in spite of the fact that they're in favor of abortion because of their position on other issues. In other words, you can make a prudential judgment and weigh the variables and come to it. I say, well, I disagree with his or her position on abortion, but I love their position on immigration or on the environment or on care for the poor or, you know, heating oil for poor people in New England in the wintertime or whatever it is that your passion might be, you can make a prudential judgment. So Catholics don't have to. The Archbishop of Colorado, of Denver, I believe he said, is one of our more conservative Catholic bishops in the country. And it doesn't surprise me that he would come down and say that. But he wasn't the only one who did that. A number of our bishops, I know, would have done the same thing. A number of our priests in our parishes.
Is it possible that we're misreading this moment entirely and that the truth is that American Catholics or many American Catholics, like countless, well, not countless, we know, millions of other voters just felt that regardless of what their views are on abortion, that issues of the economy, of immigration, sure. of the populist rhetoric and notes that Donald Trump was hitting spoke to them more.
Yes, but some of the other stuff he was saying, you know, his misogyny, his xenophobia, his disrespect for women, his disrespect for the truth should have caused any conscientious Christian or Jew or whoever, any person of any ethic, not to vote for him. So why did so many Catholics vote for him? Swing away. The Catholics that President Obama had won went away. Secretary Clinton won the Hispanic vote by less percentage than President Obama had. So why the significant shift when she was a wonderful woman, could have been our first woman president, so much in sync with Catholic social teaching on so many issues, a great, decent, and experienced person. Why would we not have voted for her? That's what I'm trying to find out. And sure, jobs and the economy and his talk about terrorism and all that was important to us. But to me, the one I think where we faltered was around the abortion issue, especially in those swing states, which even by way of compared to Massachusetts Catholics, I think it'd be fair to say might tend to be a little more traditional.
So there's one more thing or two more things actually I want to ask you, because a couple of months ago, also in the New York Times, Ross Douthat, the New York Times columnist, mm-hmm. he wrote about a populism versus, I don't know what you call it, conservatism in the United States versus that same divide within the Catholic Church itself. And he said that in his view, it's Pope Francis within the world of Catholics who's the populist, whereas obviously Donald Trump would be the populist in the American context, but I just want to read one quick
Please.
Thing here and get your reaction to it. He says that that Pope Francis may be making a traditionalist critique of the entire post-Vatican II Church, I'm misreading this. Basically, he says that Ross Douthat says that the younger Catholic right in America is already more skeptical of modernity than the Pope John Paul II generation, and that Pope Francis may be at risk of pushing them even further right in America. What's your thought?
I think that's wishful thinking on Ross's part. I don't think there's any substance to that whatsoever. I mean, you can play games with those names. I mean, sure, Pope Francis is a populist the way that Bernie Sanders was a populist. But there's no correlation at all between what Pope Francis is saying and that type of conservative restorationist Catholicism.
Mm-hmm. Well, Thomas Groom is the professor of theology and religious education at Boston College's School of Theology and Ministry. He's director of the Church of the 21st Century Center, and he's also author of What Makes Us Catholic. We have a link to his New York Times op-ed at our website, radioboston.org. Professor Groom, thanks so much for joining us
today.
Thank
you for having me.
That's it for today. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.